welcome to the Safety Third Podcast. This very special edition of the Safety Third Podcast has three people. How in the world is the editor going to put three people side by side? I actually never know. I never really know. I feel like we need to make it worse, like five people at one
Maybe
point.
Maybe just like a pie chart.
Yeah. You know? Oh, pie chart. Can we do a pie chart?
That's actually not a bad idea.
Editor. Can we do a pie chart? You know, there's a large portion of people that listen to the audio version of this podcast, and so half of like the jokes and references and things. I like to think we've gotten slightly better as hosts over time. You know, where we kind of like try to figure out how do you help people who are not listening to this video wise. You sort of like you start to connect the dots. Like right now in my head, all I'm thinking is we have a guest, and I haven't introduced him yet. So there's this fantastic YouTube channel. And I'm not just saying that because you're right in front of me, called Practical Engineering.
Thank you.
And you, Grady, make like the, I don't know how to describe it, but it's like civil engineering, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I am a civil engineer, licensed civil engineer. So most of it's about
this
infrastructure.
I'm doing a lot of stuff, and so I'm basically getting a free consultation for this episode of the Safety Third Podcast. But like, your channel is essentially the like if Discovery Channel was only civil engineering. You're like the civil engineering corner of like a TV show. Like, I really like your videos.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, yeah. It's mainly infrastructure.
Yeah, it's like what you wish Discovery Channel.
Yeah.
You know. Recently, I've noticed a trend in like power line and like that kind of videos. Is there a reason for that? Is that like your, you know, specialty?
No, actually, you know, that's probably the furthest from like my professional expertise, but it's just a topic that's really interesting to me. And also, I think it's fun to write videos in kind of series, and so you can like cover multiple aspects of a topic. And so sometimes I'll just be like, let's do five videos on the power grid, and
I'll
just
write. Yeah, you can't fit it all into one video, so you've got to break it up into chapters.
Yeah, I would say it's kind of like a textbook. Like, that's why I feel like it's very like educational. Like, it's very, because I think, you know, like that's something that, you know, we struggle with a lot. Is trying to include more smart stuff, but it also tends to be the thing that people have like the less attention for. Like, which, you know,
it's
whatever.
It's a balance. It's definitely a balance.
Yeah. And I, the way I, you know, sleep at night soundly is by convincing myself that I help kids think that they can achieve building things, and then they go watch an actual smart channel to learn how to build things. I give them the confidence to do it.
Yeah. If this idiot can do it, then I can do it.
Yeah, if that idiot can do it, then I definitely can do it. So how did you, like, you know, I think that I like to tell people that anyone who's successful on YouTube, there's something a little bit wrong with them. And like you're an engineer. Do you have a PE?
Yeah. Yeah,
so
I'm licensed.
So you're like a real actual engineer.
Not just a practical engineer.
A practicing engineer.
Yes.
So you can go to school and get a degree, but that doesn't give you much authority as an engineer. But you have actual engineering authority. You can put... is it an actual stamp or a signature? How does it work?
Yeah, it's a stamp. I mean, I don't have a physical stamp. I have a digital copy of it.
Nah, boo.
Some people get the stamp. I was like,
What color ink you use for the digital stamp? Is it red or black or
no? It's
blue?
Black.
It's black.
Well, every state has different rules about it. Texas, I think they stick with black.
Is it just like a PDF format? You know, you just like drag in the stamp out of the document.
Yeah, pretty
and that's
much.
It?
I don't work it. I'm not in consulting anymore. But back when I was, you know,
it's just
most of our deliverables were digital. So yeah, you just drop a PNG file and then.
Same thing
with your signature, and yeah, that's it.
Yeah, when we went to Japan, remember we had to like fill out a bunch of forms in Japanese, and like they have a different way of doing signatures. It is like a stamp or a seal. So you would type in your name, it would turn into Japanese or something, and then it would make this square-looking stamp on all the like official documents.
That's cool.
Except it means nothing. Your stamp means something because you can put numbers on a piece of paper and then you put your stamp on it. I feel like it's more of a liability thing, right?
It really is. Yeah, it's a way to take professional responsibility for something. Sometimes sometimes a really big thing and like, a really expensive thing. So
I swear to God, this bridge isn't going to collapse.
That's so, gotta yeah. be. Is there like liability insurance, like malpractice insurance? Is there?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
It's errors and omissions insurance.
What's the scariest thing you've stamped?
I mean, the biggest project I've sealed is like a big spillway on a dam, on a new dam,
with like a town below it.
I mean, yeah, pretty far downstream.
Children's hospital. So
you'd have enough time to warn them. It wouldn't be like a surprise.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you end up going from a practicing engineer? Are you still practicing? Do you still do stuff, or is it no. just the YouTube stuff now?
No, I work on the YouTube channel full time. No.
So I like, you know, I said earlier, like there's something wrong with everybody who is, you know, successful on the platform. Because like, you know, I went to school, I got a degree, and then I immediately like didn't use it, right? Like you went even further. You went to school, you got a degree, you got your stamp. Is it just a bachelor's? What do you have?
I have a master's, but...
You have a master's and a stamp, and now you make YouTube videos. But at least you do make them about the topic you went to school for. Why did you switch? What was the?
It was super gradual. Like the YouTube channel was a hobby for a really long time.
Yeah.
That I just it just scratched an itch that wasn't getting scratched at work. Like it was a creative outlet. It was just something fun, and you know it started getting more and more popular. The pandemic happens. Had a baby, didn't have any free time left anymore. And I was like, well, either I got to find a way to make my hobby my job or
yeah.
I got to get rid of it, basically. So I kind of got forced
rid of
into
the
decision. Yeah. The baby, he's gone.
He gave it.
No. So even worse, we had another one.
Oh, God. No. So you basically figured out how to... I say cheat the system a little bit. You got to do what you wanted to do for work, and you used your kind of niche skill set. Okay, Jimmy, you're going to end this call. He's on the keyboard right now.
He's dangerous.
Okay, please. Why do you do this to me? The cat is on the keyboard right now. For the audio listeners and video listeners, because nobody can see this. Actually, I'll pan the camera down. I'll show you how dangerously close he is to it. He's literally on top. Look how he's... Look at, yeah, he's so fat, he's like bleeding over the keyboard. So you use this like niche to essentially generate content that like no one else really can do. Because what person in their right mind would leave a civil engineering job to make YouTube videos?
Yeah, I mean, that's true, but I wasn't strategic about it in that way. It was just like, this is something that I really love and is really important to me, and like I think I found a way to make it interesting to other people, and to me that was the big part of it.
What do you think is sort of the most rewarding part of it? Is it teaching people, or is it being able to like pay bills with it, like the thing you like doing? Or
yeah, I mean, I think it's a mix. Being able to support myself this way is extremely rewarding in and of itself. Just like, you know, my job is to be creative and try to inspire people and sell advertisements.
Yeah. We just did, we've been selling a lot of merchandise and we just made a product. And that's like, we're filming a video on the second channel. Now I'm just like at the very end of it. We, you know, like kind of promote one of the products. I'm just sitting there like, what are we doing? I've never, like, am I making an ad
hard.
Or making a YouTube video? Like,
it is hard. So that's a fun part of it too, but I mean, it is cool to like put a public face on an industry that's like important to me.
Yeah.
And I get tons of emails from like professors showing my videos in classes and high schoolers who like chose civil engineering as a major because they they got inspired by my videos. So that's like, I mean, who could ask for more than that, really?
Yeah. That is a nice, that is like, it, every time, you know, I mean, there's been days you have a bad day and then you get an email that says something nice about how you help them kind of figure out what they want to do in their life. And that's
sort just
of,
cool.
It definitely helps to.
Because like, I didn't have engineers. Like, I grew up in a tiny town. I didn't know any engineers when I was a kid and I had no exposure to the field. So like, if I had what I make now on YouTube, you know, who knows what?
Yeah.
Yeah. I ended up getting a degree in geography and and realizing I'm not cut out for this. This isn't for me, you know.
Geography sucks, right?
Nothing against geography.
So
but...
I got a job where we destroyed, we tear it apart, we conquered geography. Take that, Earth.
I never thought about it that way, but...
What was your first video? I was trying to find it, but, you know, YouTube got rid of that. You know, you can't do that anymore.
Oh, yeah. I think the first video I posted was probably 2013 or 2014. And I was making videos about woodworking because my father-in-law gave me some tools, and I had never used any woodworking tools. So, you know, what do? You get on YouTube to watch videos. And that was the first time that I saw, you know, people putting out regular content and who had, like, kind of built a brand and a community around what they were, around videos they were making. Because before then, to me, YouTube was just, like, the search engine for videos.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah,
that, like, for some reason, that instantly got me. And I was like, I want to be a part of that. And so I made some woodworking projects and made videos about them and put them online. And that's how the channel started.
Who did you watch when you kind of first found YouTube? Do you remember any of?
Oh, yeah. Peter Brown, Frank Howarth, and Woodworking for Mere Mortars were the three channels that I was just like, this is awesome. I want to do this.
That's so funny. You started off as like hardcore woodworking. Like,
yeah, it was.
Yeah. And then when was the first video you posted, like, kind of entering into this engineering territory?
I think it was 2016 is when I was like, I'm going to rebrand the channel, because I had made a few videos about engineering. And I was like, you know, it would be cool just to have a channel about engineering. So I, like, you know, paid someone to make a logo and rename the channel to Practical Engineering. And I think it was 2016 is the first video that was, like, branded under that.
That's actually, I think I'm, like, right around the same time too. It was like 2016. So now that you do all this civil engineering stuff, do you know how to do a survey? Is that something you learn about?
I mean, have I ever run a total station? Yes.
Yeah.
Could I, like, if you hired me to come out and do a topographic survey of your property, could I do it? Probably not.
Okay. Interesting.
could you stamp? Can you stamp it though?
Actually,
what if I send you my bodgy designs and you don't look at the numbers, but you put your stamp on it?
That's a big no. Plus, I'm not licensed in California anyway.
Okay.
But actually, surveyors are licensed, usually in most states, to my understanding, have, like, a totally different licensing process, especially when they're, like, delineating property lines. That's got to be stamped by a registered professional land surveyor.
Yeah, but is that, like, a notary public type thing, or is that, like, an actual professional degree?
No, it is. It's an actual, like, professional licensure where you got to take an exam and all that.
Because I called some surveyors, and... they gave me prices that are almost equally bad to the tree problem.
You could go to college. For that price, you could go to college, study engineering, and become a surveyor.
So basically what I'm trying to do is I need to talk about these trees more, because they're right on the property line, and it's never really been surveyed. And so now I have to figure out how to, you know, the trees got to get cut down. And the quote I got was like $20,000. Actually, I got a worse quote. I got a quote for $30,000 too from another guy. And then the surveyors gave me a quote for like $8,000. So I'm sitting here thinking, like, okay, so if I trim the trees, then that might make the neighbors mad. So then I maybe need to figure out where the property line is.
That's the most complicated part of survey. Like, there's a lot of questions you can answer as a surveyor that don't require licensure.
Right.
But delineating boundaries between parcels is not one of them.
Okay. This is great.
I want to know, why is it so official? I mean, like, what kind of tools do you need to do this? It's just basically like, this is the property line here and here.
Yeah, but depending on the situation, you could have to do deed research and, like, go in deep into the archives and...
Yeah, so, I had to do that, and then the county... Okay, so I've realized that I've been paying a lot of money and I don't really get anything for it. They just...
yeah.
So, So I went and talked to the government, and they told me they said your house is illegal. And I looked at the guy, and I said, I don't know what that means, but it sounds really bad. And why does Google show a line around my house if the county says that it's not legal? Like, do I go to jail because I bought it? Do they like bulldoze my house down? And he said, no, you just have to pay us money, and then we go into our archive. And I'm like, okay, I have a question. How come I was able to buy the house if it's not legal? Long story short, none of that mattered, and I had to pay them like $400.
Oh my gosh.
Just to give me like a check that says that, like, I wouldn't say I'm having like a super bad time, but definitely I'm not having a good time.
fun.
I've actually been buying some cool, like, I feel like there's kind of like a lot of construction.
Will's been having a midlife crisis.
I would say it's worse. It's bad for me. I'm not enjoying whatever's happening right now. I've been buying a lot of tools, and I feel like there's a lot of maybe a little bit of overlay between like civil engineering and you know, construction tools. So I bought a rotary laser level.
Uh-huh.
And do you have one of these, Kevin? Have you seen one of these, rotary laser level? Have you used one?
Like, they have like the line that spins around.
Have you used one?
Yeah, I've used one.
I
don't have one.
Had no idea how cool some of the construction stuff you can buy is. This rotary laser level, you put it on a table or like a tripod, and it automatically levels itself, and then it starts spinning. And then you carry this little, like, it looks like a stud finder, and you tape it to like a stick or a ruler. And you carry it, and you go up and down, and it beeps when it hits the perfect spot on. So you can like tell exactly where everything is relative to the laser level.
Wait, what do you mean?
You can walk like 1,000 feet away.
Oh, it can find the laser.
Way. Yeah, there's an easier way.
No, fill a tube up with water.
Oh well, then you need like
that's the old school version. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That is a good idea. It probably would have been cheaper than the laser level.
Well, the thing about the tube full of water is it can go around trees and stuff. So, like, especially, my house is on piers, and so a rotary level under there is useless. But
right.
A tube full of water, you can go check each pier and
see if it's
level with its neighbor or whatever.
Damn, I got ripped off. I should have done the tube trick.
But there's a thing with the tube full of water that someone told me. That like if one part of it heats up, I can't remember exactly what it was, but you know, water changes volume just a tiny bit with changes in temperature, so you have to be kind of cautious about that.
Okay, so the laser was a good investment, you're telling
yeah.
me. You're telling me I didn't make a mistake.
Definitely.
Thank you. Thank God. Glad that we ended that on a positive note. I've been making lots of mistakes recently. Kevin, you've seen some of the pictures of the mistakes I'm making.
Hey, I'm just saying, I'm talking about midlife crisis, and you bring up your laser level?
What about the tractor or the excavator?
My latest
mistake leaks about 2 gallons of hydraulic fluid a day. how's your guys' midlife crisis going?
I bought a giant industrial laser.
That is, you know, the laser Kevin just bought.
It's like an old guy buying a Ferrari and then never driving
No. Throw the Ferrari in the trash. The laser is, when you tell somebody about a laser or the military is talking about a laser, that's what this laser is. Like, it's what you think a laser is. It is the craziest thing.
It's the death ray that you imagine when you're like 10 years old.
I saw the video.
It's insane.
I didn't know you bought it, though. I figured you just rented it or something.
I don't think any company that is legally filed in this country would ever rent that.
That's right.
Like, that laser should not have been able to cross the borders. Like, I guarantee that thing violates literally every single rule, including the laws of the universe. Like,
that is so scary.
What even is it? It's just class 4. There's nothing above class 4, right?
Yeah, it's just class 4.
It should be like a class 6 laser. Like, it's bad.
Class 4 ends, I think, at like 1 watt, and this is 2,000 times above that.
Oh my gosh.
The laser you bought is, it's like, it's everything about it is bad, right? So it's like, it's near IR, right? Because it's fiber.
Yeah.
So
you can't see it.
You can't see it, but it will pass through your cornea and focus on your retina.
Yeah.
So
You can feel it, though. Like, if you're welding something and there's a reflection, like, you
Jesus
feel this
Christ.
Wave of
oh
heat wash
gosh.
Over your body. It's
you could hurt the moon with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that. So what's the like farthest you've been able to focus it?
I would say about 30 feet. If you take off the...
Oh, my God.
So it comes with the two lenses, like the 500 millimeter cleaning focusing lens and then the 150 millimeter welding focusing lens. But if you take that out, it's just like the collimated fiber. And that's like just, you know, like they... Whenever they assemble it, it's like... No, it's like set at like 30 feet about.
Oh, my God.
It just kind of stays at like a 1 millimeter diameter beam forever.
Forever?
Yeah.
That's horrifying.
Yeah, the fiber lasers are really high quality lasers, like beams, holy so they shit. Don't really diverge that much.
Right.
I it's hard to like really try to describe how dangerous something like that is, because if the wrong person, I mean, you were looking at the videos where they're not wearing glasses or anything like that. Like,
and I was searching for it like in Chinese because these are kind of new in America. They've had them in China for a while, so I was typing up like, you know, Google translating fiber laser retina injury and stuff like that, and there's like, you know, people asking questions on like Yahoo Answers in China, like,
oh my
I was
gosh.
At work and I can't see anymore. They're like,
how are you typing
doctors.
This then, huh? Explain yourself. yeah that one, that lasers are that laser is very scary. That I genuinely am surprised that they're as like, what did you have to do to buy it?
Nothing,
because like there's people like like x-rays, you know, I mean, there's the whole x-ray thing of like x-rays are bad, like radiation is bad for you, but within doses, like lasers are like, if you had to choose, what would you rather have to interact with, like on the receiving end of x-rays or a laser, a high power laser?
Oh, I would say laser for sure.
You'd rather be on the receiving end of a laser?
Not the receiving end, but to...
Well, that's what I'm saying is like, what's worst? Like,
that's a hard comparison. But yeah, a laser that you can't see.
I tried renting one of these lasers like 5 years ago when they were like, you know, 50 times the price or something, basically. And the company's like, no, we can't. It's $500,000 and it's, you know.
And you're an idiot.
Yeah. But you can come to our facility and like and demo it. And I'm like, okay, like here's my ideas. And they're like, they just you're never like, respond.
I want to do like Fruit Ninja where I cut a watermelon in half,
that's
but with like
I
a laser.
I literally said that. I said, yes.
That's probably like the one thing you couldn't cut in half, too.
Did they even respond?
They said it was very diplomatic, but they were just like, well, we'll check and see if we have time and
they
stuff
sent
like that.
Worm emoji that you send on Discord.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin's got this emoji, this picture, this meme he sends on Discord. So it looks like a worm with a thought bubble, and it's like underneath someone who said something stupid. It's like someone says something stupid, and then you like, post this picture of the worm, and then it makes it look like their thought came from a stupid worm. Anyways, that's what the laser company replied to. Yeah. So now you have one, and you literally cut a small tree down with it.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, man.
How do you come up with ideas, Kevin?
The worm. The
Were
little
you just
worm
on,
in there?
Like, AliExpress?
The worm.
The worm.
Were you just on all the worm?
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't think I would be comfortable. Did you see how much it cost in the video or no?
No, but it cost about $11,000.
So, you know, if I was on Alibaba or AliExpress, it's the same
Baba.
Thing. But I don't know if I'd be super comfortable sending $11,000 to a company who claims they're going to be sending me a 2 kilowatt fiber laser. Like,
yeah, and especially this company was the first, like, their first sale, apparently. But they had it marked as, like, ready to ship, because a lot of times there's like a month or two long lead time. So I'm like, well, they said that theirs is ready to ship, so I'll buy it from them. It was not ready to ship, and it took them like a month to get it on the boat. So
and then,
oh my gosh,
and then the whole debacle to get it off the boat.
Oh yeah, it got stuck in the Panama Canal. It was stuck waiting to go through. There's like, if you look at a satellite map of all the ships waiting to go through the Panama Canal, there's like, you know, hundreds of them that are just like anchored off the coast.
You know, this requires a civil engineer to destroy the geography. We can make an even bigger canal. They do that because the water level is different, right? What would happen if they just made a big canal?
I've been wondering that too.
In the Panama Canal?
Yeah, like if they took the Panama Canal and just trenched it, pulled all the locks out, just let nature do its thing.
Would that be bad?
Well, it would take a tremendous amount of excavation just to get the canal low enough to be able to do that. But then also,
wait, is the water level that different? What's, do you know off the top of your head, like the difference?
Oh, it's not that different. I think it's, I don't know. I would guess like 20 feet, 30 feet maybe.
But it's not like all of the water from the Pacific Ocean would drain into the...
No, I mean, there might be slight differences that cause some flow from one side to the other, but it's...
Would it be just like, it would be a consistent flow?
So like, well, I think it would go back and forth as the tide comes in and out.
Yeah, yeah, as like the local water level elevations change on either side.
How much do you know about canals?
I mean, a decent amount.
So like, does one side get higher than the other? Like, does it switch back and forth, or is it always one direction?
I mean, I don't know about the specific tidal changes in those areas.
No,
I have to assume that one is higher than the other sometimes, and the opposite sometimes.
I know very little.
I mean,
about
if you have
canals.
Like two giant pools of water. Yeah. And then there's like a kind of a narrow channel between them, and the moon's going overhead. It's going to pull one up higher, and as it's going across, all that water is going to try to go into the lower pool.
Right.
And since it's like, you know, a narrow canal, it's going to be like
so
kind of a bigger tidal
up
wave.
To the, that makes sense.
I don't know. I'm not a tidal scientist.
No, that's accurate.
Yeah. I feel like you need to know about space and tides and civil engineering. This is a pretty wide skill set required to truly understand a canal.
The big reason the Panama Canal has locks is because how much excavation it would take to get the canal low enough that you could go through it.
Oh,
all the way.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, that actually
makes
like a lot
of sense. Because it's like hard rock.
Right.
I mean, it was already an incredible feat of engineering the way it was built, and to do that would have been like practically impossible.
Okay. Impractical engineering.
So you're saying there's a chance.
You should have a second channel.
If we started when we built it, we could have done it. It could have been done by now.
That's true.
You know?
But the other issue is all the local streams and rivers. I mean, those are a main source of water for Panama, and so...
Yeah, but how else are we going to get all the, like, folding chairs and stuff?
Think about my laser welder.
How would the welder get here? Yeah. You know, I just, this is a price I'm willing to pay. What's the most dangerous tool you own?
That I own? Probably a table saw, to be honest.
Do you have a
table saw built in the 1970s?
Okay, so it's just a regular table saw. I feel like Kevin pretty much just laser at this point.
Yeah.
There's got to be.
$11,000 laser is Kevin's answer.
I think mine has got to be, it's just the excavator. I think the heavy machinery, like the tractor. So tractors are super dangerous, but I've heard that it's mostly the PTO, which stands for power takeoff.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Those are the mangler.
Yeah. It's like the lathe videos, except it's a tractor.
Yes.
Like, so it's called
slower.
A PTO, which is the drive shaft that comes out of the back of the tractor. I don't have one. I think that it could have one, but I don't know if that interferes with four-wheel drive. It might be like you get either PTO or four-wheel drive.
I don't know.
But those can drive external things like mowers or pumps or whatever the hell. I think you can rent generators and stuff too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, compressor. But because you've got this exposed turning shaft that's kind of got little, like, you know, crevices and maybe a universal joint that could potentially pinch things, they're known for consuming people. So maybe the, God, what's, I don't know. I don't know what's worse. It's all bad.
I mean, you've already almost killed yourself with the excavator, right?
I did. No, it's not that bad. It doesn't look that bad on camera. It was scary. I knew it was going to happen, so I was prepared
for
it.
Oh, you have it on camera?
Yeah. I don't do anything risky off camera. The camera comes on if I think I'm about to die. When I picked up the tree,
it was more like a safety demonstration.
I grabbed it, and I think it was like laying down when I grabbed it. So when it came up, the like kind of potential of it, it like wanted to swing down. And so when I released it, like as it was releasing, it started swinging. But I did.
So it's like you picked it up like this. And then when you let go,
exactly.
It did something like that.
Yeah. But I did know it was going to happen, and it didn't get close. But seeing a tree even move your direction at all, it's not. I think I made like one of like the scream, like a little. So table saw. I think you gotta get something more dangerous.
I know. I do. I have a good sized studio now with the workshop and everything, so I need to upgrade.
What kind of tool would you want to get that would be dangerous?
Well, I mean, I have a drone now. I'm working on another channel that's all about construction, and so I got my drone license. I got a drone.
What do you have on the drone? Do you have a LiDAR unit on the drone? Topographical survey maps by any chance?
I don't have that.
Wait, actually, this is my pitch to people listening. So I got a quote. You know, I don't want to tell you what the price is, but anyways, if anyone here, for whatever reason, has a LiDAR unit on their drone or wants to let me borrow their drone with a LiDAR unit, that'd be cool. Let me know what you would want in return.
What do you want LiDAR? You want LiDAR for your just to get a topographic map of your property?
Yeah.
Take your laser level. Just mark out a 1x1 grid and.
Oh God.
I mean, it'll take you an afternoon.
An afternoon?
Yeah, you could do a topo survey of your property, no problem.
Yeah, they just it turns out. You ever heard like the wedding tax?
Oh yeah.
Where you go to rent like a tent for a party.
And if you tell them it's a wedding,
like $3,000. Yep. If you tell them it's a wedding, it's like $10,000. I think there might be something about a house tax where they go on Zillow and they like, then they just decide how much to charge you. And then, and then I go on Craigslist looking for used equipment to do it myself. The problem is the license, right? So it's like, I can't go get one of those. So I'm sort of stuck. I'm like trapped in this hell of contractors that charge a lot and the government forcing me to do it.
Here's my analogy. It's like the healthcare system, right? Why does an aspirin cost $40 at a hospital?
Yes.
I don't know.
They taste good.
They taste better?
The ones you buy at the store don't taste good, yeah.
That's true. You can get the really big ibuprofen, the 800 milligram ones.
Yeah.
But you got to have somebody prescribe that to you. But you could just buy four of them yourself and take four of them.
Right. Yeah, no,
it's kind of like that with the whole construction industry. I don't know why stuff costs as much as it does, because I guess it can.
Because
it
can.
It just passed the savings on to you at the end.
Yeah, I have realized that I need to make more videos this year, basically. That's what I realized. I was like, I got a quote to, I love, what is this podcast has turned into? House renovation by people who don't know how to renovate houses. By person who doesn't know how to renovate house. Sorry for dragging you guys into this. I got a quote to sandblast the ceiling, because there's like a wood ceiling. I think they call it cathedral ceiling or chapel ceiling. I can't remember which one it is. It's just like a roof. Like the ceiling is the roof, basically, on the inside. And it was painted by the previous owners, and they painted this like vomit green. And I'm like, this is like gonna be a cool wood ceiling. I called the guy for like a blasting quote to do like glass or soda blasting or something, and he was like $3,000. I was just like, yeah, I like the green paint. It's nice.
Laser.
Well, at least it means we get more videos.
Yeah.
You should write a book.
I do. How to destroy your house and spend a lot of money doing it.
How to destroy your house and get mesothelioma.
Dude, I don't even want to talk about the asbestos.
Oh gosh.
Or the lead paint. I'm pretty sure that it has asbestos tile. I know it's, you know when you look at something and you're like, that's asbestos.
I mean, tile is not that bad.
No, my house it's got popcorn too, though.
And... Oh, it does. My house has asbestos siding. And
on the outside?
Yeah.
Well, that's just your neighbor's problem, not yours.
Well, yeah. But it's not friable, so it's not going to get in the air. So you have to be thoughtful about it, but you don't have to like abate it if you're going to mess with it or whatever.
Right. I mean, what's wrong with just dying a couple years early too?
Yeah.
That's what I think. It's far off. Like, it's not a big deal.
Figure that out by the time you get cancer anyway.
The scientists are smart.
That's like,
if they made a vaccine in 2 years, they could cure asbestos in two more years, right?
I'm a gambling man.
How long has asbestos been around? How long have they been trying to cure asbestos cancer? So that's what I've been doing, and I've been learning a lot. Like, I hate doing it. But I feel kind of like forced to learn about how this stuff works. Because if you just pay someone to come in, I've learned that they don't always do a good job. Like you can pay them and they'll charge you a bunch and you'll be like, okay, they charged me a bunch. That means they'll do a good job. And then they don't do a good job. And so it's like, if you don't know what's going on and you're not familiar with it, then you're just going to have to deal with a bunch of crap in the future. And so for me, it's like, okay, I'm going to just get involved and try to do some of it myself, try to at least learn a lot, watch videos, That way I know how to talk to people when they're, you know, telling you how much it's going to cost to do whatever. And I feel like I really like learning the stuff, but the instant I kind of have learned enough, then I don't want to do it anymore. And then I just let the contractor do it and just make sure that I think they're doing it the right way.
I think that's accurate. Also get more than one quote because you learn so much just by...
Yeah, that's my strategy. That's what I've been doing. I call someone, I have no idea what I'm talking about, and I ask for something, and they give me some ridiculous quote because they're like, oh, this guy's an idiot. We'll just charge him up the ass. And then I'm like, ha, ha, ha. Then I call someone else, and I use what I learned
all the
from
lingo.
That conversation. And it's like, you think you've got me, but I know a bunch of big words now, and you're going to think that I know what I'm doing, and then you're going to charge me less. And then they come back with the exact same price as the first guy.
I think my neighbor became a contractor just so he could like do it cheaply himself. Like he built his house, he became a contractor, then like hired everybody himself or something. Maybe you could do that.
That is a problem. I don't know if it's true where you are, but in San Antonio, you can't, there's a lot of stuff you can't do on your own because you've got to pull a permit and it has to be a contractor. They have to have a contractor's license.
Really?
Yeah.
Even for like stupid stuff, because I like the joke.
It's not
that
everything,
I've been hearing,
but it's a lot of stuff.
Okay, because I've been sort of being told in general that when you deal with, you know, the government, it's like the joke is you need a permit to install a ceiling fan. Like it's almost like comical what they require you to put down on paper. Like it almost makes me want to do it like to spec, like like pick up a product, like build a project. But do it to spec, just to show the insanity of, you know, technically what's on paper, what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, that's true. You have to pull a permit to have a garage sale in San Antonio.
Like, oh man, what you're gonna walk in there and give them the $100 that you're gonna make at the garage sale to hold the garage sale? They
it's
probably
crazy.
Want you to charge sales tax.
Probably
you're supposed to do that.
Don't get me started on sales tax.
The more I like think about that, the worse it gets, because it's like sales tax affects everybody equally, and so people who make less money are paying like a disproportionate amount of sales tax.
Yeah, I mean within that state, and even
then you get charged on, like, if you're a seller, if you're a merchant, the state takes sales tax off the sale, and then you made money off the sale. Oh, why don't we just maybe take some of that too?
Yeah.
I was thinking about, like, so we were like, you know, I was talking to my producer today, and he was like, yeah, this other company, like, that it's the agency that we run to like bring ads for everybody. We got not audited, but it's like a soft audit because they randomly select companies to show your sales tax, your, I don't want to say voluntary, but self-reported sales tax. So like if you buy something from out of state, you're supposed to report it and pay the tax on it. It's like, yeah, it's insane. Like you, like it just starts to get really complicated. And like, how do you keep track of all this stuff? And like, where does it, you just put it on a spreadsheet and you just pay them this money. And then that merchant, so it's just.
I feel like the IRS keeps this data on you so they can just like come in anytime they want. They're like, oh, well, he's done this. Like everybody's done this, right? So they're like, we got our warrant.
I wish they would just charge you in one place.
I'm in the thick of the sales tax thing too, because I wrote a book last year and I'll sell my own copies of my book. My publisher was like, oh yeah, we'll wholesale you copies of your own book and you can sell them on your website. And I was like, oh, easy. And now like have sales tax liabilities in like 10 states.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all different. And I mean, it takes like half a day to register your business within the state.
Just send me a bill. Send me a bill.
No, they don't send you a bill. They just audit you.
Yeah, that's what happens. If you don't pay, you're going to get audited. They know exactly what you owe.
I remember looking into it. Like when we started like, you know, selling some t-shirts, I did the same thing. I was like, yeah, like, you know, I'll just do it myself. Like how hard could it be to make websites?
No big deal.
Making websites, super easy. Taking credit cards, super easy.
So easy.
You want to pay sales tax to 4,000 different entities?
Oh my
Holy shit.
Like, it takes me like a day every quarter to remit $5 of sales tax to the state of Ohio.
Oh
like,
God.
What
happens if you don't pay?
They have
like sales
tax
to a state that you're not part of. I mean, are you like banned from Idaho or something?
No, I mean, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I'm not an accountant.
You should start a channel called Practical Tax Fraud.
When Shopify says, you have a sales tax liability in this state, I'm just like, okay, time to spend half a day trying to register my business in this state.
They don't take care of it? Shopify doesn't take care of it?
They collect it, but they don't remit it. And so you have to like do that yourself, basically. And it's a lot of work. It's a lot of paperwork.
Well, that's
I'm
what you
sure
get.
There are services who would do it for you, and I probably should find one. But
I'm glad we made your life more difficult so that you could make money that you then pay back to us.
Yeah, exactly.
Just that's only crazy. Accept Bitcoin.
That's the way right there.
we need to go back to cash. I always ask for the cash discount, and they always look at me like, am I a cop? I'm like, I don't think I'm a cop. I would know, right, if I was a cop? Yeah, I don't know. I like learning. I think that's why I like YouTube so much, is I can watch somebody explain something to me without having to suffer through the entire process myself. You know, it's like, it's fun to watch a video about someone explaining a bridge falling down and breaking apart. It's not fun to be the guy who had to go through the process of having his bridge fall apart so that someone in the future could tell a story about it.
That's very accurate.
But yeah, I don't know. What kind of stuff what are you working on now? Like how's the book? How did you like that process? Are you working on something new? Is it?
I don't have another book project right now, but it was fun. I mean, it's something I had always wanted to do. It was a ton of work, like more than I thought it would be.
You know, if you'd done it a couple years later, I would have given you all the wood that I'm about to cut down, and you could have used it and saved a bunch of money.
Yeah, because there was a paper shortage.
It's pretty easy to turn wood to paper, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
I'm sure you could figure out how to do it on YouTube in your backyard. Yeah, we're sort of homegrown. We make the books.
Literally.
We distribute it ourselves.
I don't know. It's like this tremendous investment. It's not like a YouTube video where it's like, you know, a few weeks of your life and maybe it flops and maybe it does well. It's like, I spent like an entire year working on this. And who knows? I have no idea if people will like it or not.
Were you, Jimmy, were you nervous? Like how nervous were you?
I don't think I felt nervous about it. I know I would have been disappointed. Pretty like.
Like sad kind of.
Sad about it if it wasn't very successful.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it was, and it's...
Yeah, it did really well. I mean, it's still the top of its category.
Really?
Do you want to
tell us about
it?
You want to tell the audience about it?
5 stars on Amazon.
It's like what they do on like a real TV show.
Number one
bestseller. Like the Colbert Report. Number one bestseller. No, that doesn't count. Everything's a number one bestseller.
Yeah, there's a lot of categories on Amazon.
In architectural building books by YouTubers named Grady.
Yes, finally I topped that category out.
You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, sure. It's called Engineering in Plain Sight, and it's just like, it's basically like, you know, a field guide to birds or rocks or plants or whatever, but it's that for infrastructure, basically. Mm. So it's like a,
I feel like when you get to
very...
the wind turbine page, there's a bit of crossover between birds and civil
engineering. Yeah, that's true. That's true. There are a few birds. But yeah, it's an illustrated field guide to infrastructure, basically.
That's awesome. I just bought the, there's the electronics kind of like guide as well,
for
very similar to yours.
After seeing the short.
That's the same publisher that you're talking about, the guy who cut the cross section.
Yeah, because I saw, that one, yeah.
Exact same publisher and released, I think, on the same day as my book. So that, like, our two books were their kind of big thing for November last year, yeah.
Because I really, like, I'm definitely going to buy your book because I really, really like the, like, very, like, visual information. Like, I'm a very strong visual learner. Like, I like to see examples of stuff and reference because it just sort of, like, quickly solidifies what I'm looking for. Like, even the other day, I was, like, looking for, like, survey monuments, and I was like, I don't know what a Survey Monument looks like. And so I'm like on Google, like, what am I looking for? I
was just hoping like the little things that they stick
I couldn't find one. So then I looked it up online.
There's like all different kinds of Survey Monuments.
Oh, great. That they made it as easy as possible. Yeah. It's like, yeah, we put the gas pedal on the left. We're quirky. Buckle up. The only the consequence they made is put two seatbelts on each seat so that you're double secure because the numbers are not good. Because we're like right now, I really want to do a like a science like STEM kind of fair, like an event where people kind of show up and show off their stuff. Because you know Maker Faire hasn't done an event, and VidCon has. Well, they did. I mean, they didn't invite me this year in 2023. But I don't really care because VidCon has, you know, I mean, not ruining my chances of going to VidCon in the future, but it's gone a little bit more corporate than it used to be. And so I really want to do an event, but like, you know, so we're doing a bunch of, you know, like scouting, we're going up to some venues and it is, makes me really nervous because it's a lot of work. And a lot money, but time is money. So even, you know, like working on a book is essentially, you know, money. You know,
it's an investment.
You know, it's an investment of your time when you could be doing something else. And so it's like, it's like terrifying. And these venues, like the prices that we've been getting is like, if the whole thing works, it's fine.
Right.
But if it doesn't work, oh my God. Like you're talking just renting the venue is a down payment on a very expensive house.
Yeah.
You know, like... $100,000 or more for for a weekend. Like you're like, oh, that's cool. That's like that's the price that costs. Like man, I wish something I owned I could rent for $50,000 a weekend.
I wish we knew somebody that had a bunch of profits from a book sale that they were looking to reinvest into something that's definitely not going to make any profits.
Yeah, if you consider turning that profit into loss, it's gambling. The odds are really good.
Yeah.
The odds are guaranteed, actually. I guarantee the results. But yeah, I'm you know, I don't know. I think that like taking risks and doing stuff like that is, I don't know, you're gonna die one day, so you can't take your money and time with you to the grave. So I feel like, you know, that's something to be proud of, you know? Like how do you feel having, you know, gone through that effort and completed it and sold it?
I mean, it's super exciting.
You sound like only mildly enthused right now.
Like, yeah, you know. Well, it's okay. Like when you work that hard on something for that long, once you get to the end of it, you're just like, okay, I guess I'm done. I mean, it feels so anticlimactic. But what was crazy is, you know, I talked about selling the book on my website. So those copies, I said, I'll sign them. Well, I ended up sitting in a warehouse for 4 days straight signing books nonstop. Yeah. I was like, why did I do this?
How many did you sign?
I've signed a lot.
Like 2,000, 3,000?
I think 10,000.
Hey, you signed 10,000?
That's nuts.
Holy shit. Yes. I mean, I have nothing on John Green, but oh my gosh, to sign that many copies. I was like taking Tylenol and like walking around the warehouse, shaking my hand out every hour.
Your hand just doesn't work anymore.
Oh my gosh, I felt miserable at the end of it.
Yeah, that's rough. I mean, we did like, we sold the CAT certificates and I think that was 1,000 and I did that in like half a day. And
oh wow.
Like my signature was like changing through the process.
Oh my gosh. Like, by the end of it, I was like, if I got a mark on the paper...
If I spent that day doing those and then someone said, you've got 10 more days of this, I think I would just run away.
Every pallet, they would just roll another pallet. I was just in this dingy break room this warehouse and they would just roll a new pallet in and I'd be like.
Did you have to travel? Like, did you, or was it local?
It was in Austin. I mean, Austin's an hour and a half drive from me, so it's
okay, so it was like a day, you just show up in the morning and then.
Yeah.
Did you have any idea what 10,000 was when you started this? Yeah, that is like, I think, a very interesting phenomenon of how your brain works. Is like 10,000 is almost unfathomable. Like you think
it's
you
like
know what it is?
An entire semi truck full of books. Of just books.
Yeah,
And then after like signing, you know, 200 books, you're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
You just can't, the scale of it is just crazy.
You realize it'll never end. Like it feels like.
And people would make jokes like, you should have built a machine to sign them. It's like, that's not how it works. People didn't pay for a machine to sign the book. They paid for me to sign it.
What about a machine that signs it, but you have to like drop some blood on it every once in a while to lubricate it?
Machine signed with my actual blood. I think that would count.
If it could be like, I just charged a battery in my own like spare time and then just plugged the battery in and that signed all the books.
Yeah.
That would have been nice. I mean, having two kids makes it challenging to go to Austin for 4 days and just sign books in a warehouse nonstop.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are you working on now? Like just videos, any other cool projects? Like
we do 2 videos a month now. And that, I mean, it's quite a bit of work.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Because one video, we try to build something, some kind of demonstration in the studio. And so that, you know, we're trying to kind of scale those up a little bit, which is exciting. Shout out to my production assistant, Josh, who's a huge fan of this podcast.
I see Josh has bad taste.
Yeah.
Kudos to you, Josh.
He's been a huge help on building those demos. But the other thing we're doing, and, you know, I haven't announced this to the channel or anything, but I'm working on a second channel that's all about on-location construction projects.
Not Impractical Engineering.
No, it's actually Practical Construction.
No.
So, you know, I call it the How It's Made of Heavy Civil Construction, if you remember that awesome show from the Discovery channel.
That's gonna be awesome.
So I'm excited about that. But
you're gonna see real excavators that aren't falling apart on the job site.
Yeah. Gosh, that's gonna be hard because you know that stuff doesn't happen overnight. So
No. So we're producing a pilot series right now, basically, and the project we're on has like a 9-month construction schedule, and we're about halfway into it.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's a long duration project, and Josh is the one out there. Usually on the days as a camera operator on those. And then I go out and fly the drone too. So It's been fun. It's kind of like, I think of it as my retirement plan to go sit around on construction sites.
You show up with a lawn chair, slap it down. You got like a lemonade.
Just an umbrella. And then fly the drone around. Easy.
I've honestly thought about that a couple of times. Like, you know, they have this big equipment on the other side of the road, and I'm like, oh, I kind of just want to like go sit over there
and watch it. I mean, that's what I'm trying to capitalize on. That
or you come to
that
my
curiosity.
House, you can drive it.
That's true. I need to come. Until, I really want to drive it.
You can, as long as you put at least two gallons of hydraulic fluid in it.
You have to bring a 5-gallon bucket of hydraulic fluid if you want to drive it.
Oh God, it's like $80 per bucket too. It's like, well, it's cheaper than stopping working.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely cheaper than fixing it.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I regret nothing. Do you ever like, you know, with your, you know, expertise in civil engineering, do you ever like drive over a bridge or like other infrastructure and you look at it and you're like, ooh, that's bad? Do you ever, your eyes kind of do that?
Oh, it's a curse. I mean, my brain never stops paying attention to all the tiny little details of like how things were designed and built. I can't help it.
How many states have you been to?
Not a ton.
Which one has the worst infrastructure?
No, I'm not prepared to answer
Mississippi.
That question.
It's always Mississippi, isn't it?
I'm not prepared to answer that question on camera.
That means there is an answer. That means there's an answer.
Well, there are a few in the running, I would say.
How does Texas rank?
Texas, in some ways, ranks pretty high. In some ways, I would say pretty low.
Yeah. Is it what I've seen some of the highway infrastructure is like a little weird, like a lot of concrete, like it's sort of
Texas highways are crazy, so like, especially like the interchanges.
Yeah,
like the multi-level interchanges where like one of the bridges is 200 feet in the air going
and
over.
It's like curving. It's banked. Yeah,
it seems like not a lot of states have interchanges like that.
Uh-uh. I think, yeah, it felt more like a personal vendetta against the sky. Like, I want to put as much concrete in the sky as possible. Well, where can people find your book? You still got how many copies you got? You're not shipping them yourself, are you? No, you can't.
Actually, my brother runs an e-commerce company in Austin called Alphamoso, so he does all the order fulfillment.
You're single-handedly keeping him afloat right now.
No, they do a lot of cool. They fulfill orders for Daft Punk and a bunch of bands.
Thank you so much for coming on the Safety Third podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're going to do, if next time you're in California or next time we're anywhere near you, let's do an in-person one.
Please. That would be a blast.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And how many extras are there? I should ask. I don't know. Maybe on Patreon. If you want extra content, we've got lots of that. Anyways, I guess that's the end.